from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny, and now we move on to Venezuela, where at least 29 people have died in clashes between the government and opposition groups, violence between police and those protesting. High crime, inflation, and shortage of supplies under President Nicolas Maduro have been escalating since last month, and in this segment we want to turn our attention to the ongoing strife in Venezuela. Joining us from Philadelphia is George Chicarello Marr. He's an assistant professor in the Department of History and Politics at Drexel University in Philadelphia, the author of We Created Chavez, A People's History of the Venezuelan Revolution. And welcome to the program. Good to have you with us.
I'm glad to be here.
We also want to welcome Moises Naim. He is a senior associate with the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace, former editor of the Foreign Policy Journal and the author of The End of Power. And he joins us from the nation's capital. Moises Naim, good to have you with us.
Thanks for having me.
Let me actually begin with you, if I may, Moises Naim, and we're going to try to get a reporter from Caracas here. But the more I read about the ongoing strife in Venezuela, the more it seems to sort of center around, well, I guess what could be described as the loss of Hugo Chavez on the one hand, or Chavismo, as it's often called, but also a real class difference. A lot of this is coming from, is it not, or emanating from the wealthier parts of Venezuelan citizenry.
There are not enough wealthy people in Venezuela to get to the numbers that we're seeing, both in the streets and in surveys and in elections. In the last election, almost half the country voted against what Chavez represented and his hand-picked successor. So Venezuela's middle class was always tiny and now has been devastated by 15 years of misguided economic policies. So in order to get to those numbers, in order to get to all of those people in the streets, you have to get a lot of very, very poor people that the government claims to represent.
But the poor people, George Chicarello Marr, are not showing up for these protests for the most part, at least from what I'm reading, are they?
Right. That's true. And I think this is something that has finally caught on in the media, and there has been a tendency to better represent what's actually going on the ground in Venezuela and recognize the fact that despite what, you know, what concerns poor Venezuelans certainly have, they're simply not turning up to these protests. And it's, while it's true that in the election in April, a great number of people, clearly from the poorer classes, voted against Maduro and for Capriles, on the one hand, that's not the numbers that we're seeing in the streets, which are still relatively small. And it's also important to recognize that part of what people were voting for in April was some kind of continuation of Chavismo, because let's be clear, Capriles and no other opposition leader is willing to stand up and say, I'm going to dismantle, you know, what Chavez built, because that is probably the least popular political position in Venezuela today.
We should also mention that Capriles lost by only 1.5% to Maduro in last year's vote. But I want to take this opportunity now to go to Caracas. William Newman is Andes region correspondent for the New York Times. He covers news largely in Venezuela, as well as Colombia, Peru, Ecuador, and Bolivia, and has that beat throughout South America. And William Newman, good to have you with us on Forum again. Welcome.
Hi, Michael. Thanks for having me.
I guess the initial question is, what's happening from your observational posts? I mean, the crackdown continues and the violence continues, and is it mainly coming from one class of people?
Well, the latest thing today is that the government has arrested a couple of mayors, opposition mayors, from areas where there have been a lot of protests. The mayor of San Cristobal, which is the city out near the Colombian border where the protests have been most intense, was arrested. And the mayor of a section of the country's third largest city was also arrested on charges related to the protests.
Forgive me, these are both members of the Popular Will Party.
No, guy from San Cristobal is. He's from Leopoldo López's party, but the mayor from Valencia is not. He's an opposition mayor from a different party.
But they're being charged with essentially anti-government actions?
Well, the mayor from Valencia is being charged with not following a court order to go out and clear the barricades that protesters had put up. And the one from San Cristobal is being charged essentially, it appears, with conspiracy and rebellion. Where he is, it's really been most intense. I've been out there, and you know, you get a sense there that the whole city is sort of out They've built barricades all over the city. The city's practically been shut down there.
San Cristobal has been called the crucible of this whole protest. What about the protesters themselves? They mainly want to get rid of Maduro? Is that essentially
what's driving? Well, you've got a real mix of things. You've got a lot of people out there who have been against Chavismo for years and years and years, and from them you sort of get this kind of cry of desperation, and a tremendous amount of protesters out in the marches and on the barricades say they want to get rid of Maduro. The student protest movement, which is a very important element of this, says that that is not one of their demands. They want the government to change its policies. When you talk to individual students, a lot of them say, yeah, I want to get rid of Maduro, but what we're asking for is the government to change its policies. One of the things that I've found is that being when I go into the slums and talk to people who are unhappy with the government, but perhaps used to be supporters of the government, they're very uncomfortable with the idea of the demand to get rid of Maduro, because they say, look, he was elected, you know, I used to be a supporter of Chavez, Chavez picked him, he shouldn't be kicked out, that's not democratic. So one of the obstacles, I think, that you see to getting more, that the opposition is seeing in terms of why certain groups of people aren't sort of joining in, is there's a division there about what the demands are. And in fact, the whole thing is very inchoate. It's very sort of hazy. What are they really asking for? I mean, a lot of it is just sort of frustration, anger.
Well, let's talk about that frustration and anger for a moment. I mean, the crime rates are extraordinarily high. The inflation rate is one of the top in the world. And people are waiting in lines to buy goods, to buy food. There's a lot of shortages, despite the country being, at least on paper, oil rich. That must create a great deal of frustration and anger.
It's very much about the economy. If the economy was doing well, we wouldn't be seeing all of this. The thing that I hear most from people is that they're angry about standing online. Sometimes you have to stand online for hours at a store. People are not going hungry. It's very important to understand that. There's shortages of specific food products, but there's still people, you know, are eating. The shortages are very specific, and they mean standing online for hours to get corn flour, to get toilet paper, or to get cooking oil, or what have you. And that has people very frustrated, especially women, who are typically the ones who do most of the shopping. And so I get a lot of angry people, and women in particular are very bitter about how that has affected their lives.
William
but
Newman,
inflation, too. Inflation is extremely high, and, you know, for poor people especially, it's a real impact.
Yeah, William Newman with us from Caracas Andes Region, correspondent for The New York Times. One more question before I let you go, William, and that is it likely from, again, your perspective that this violence is going to continue and just escalate?
The sense that I get is that there are people on both sides who sort of, you know, I talk to people and they say it's going to take more blood for this to change. Or you get angry people on the pro-government side who, you know, say, how dare these people? So there are elements on both sides that want violence. But it's sort of hard to predict where this is going to go. Let's hope not.
Well, we thank you for joining us and for your continued yeoman work down there. William Newman, again, Andes Region correspondent with The New York Times, who covers news in Venezuela as well as a number of other South African countries, Bolivia, Colombia, Peru, and Ecuador. I want to go back to our two guests for this whole segment, and they are George Chicarello Mar and Moises Naim. And Moises Naim, there's been a lot of charges coming out of the Maduro administration by the U.S. stirring up trouble. Foreign minister called Secretary of State Kerry a murderer. Three U.S. consular officials have been thrown out. How much do you think the United States is involved in this?
I'm sure the United States is following very carefully, but the United States knows that its capacity to influence the situation is quite limited. This revolt, what we see in the streets, and the reason why William Newman said that he gets so many different reasons why people are in the streets, is because these protests are not unlike those that we have seen around the world. They are leaderless. They don't have a very clear structure. They, in different places, they take different forms. The grievances are different. And so this is not a unified movement, organized, centrally coordinated and organized. This is what we are seeing around the world. And these are people that are very, very desperate about a situation that, as you described, is increasingly untenable.
So it's not like what we see, what we saw in the occupied movement or what we saw in the Middle East or what we've seen most recently in Ukraine. It's very different than all of that.
No, it's the same. It's people fed up, taking to the streets. It would be very hard to pinpoint who is the leader of the students because they are, you know, throughout the geography, all the major cities have seen some evidence and some, you know, street protests, typically organized and started by college students, but then joined by others, as William Newman was saying. You know, this is women and others. That are, it's a very desperate situation. You know, the country is running out of medicines. Hospitals are running out of the basic inputs for operations and surgeries. It is a very, you know, the shortage, the index that the central bank issues shows that the level of shortages in shelves in around the country is equal or higher than one, that those that you find in war zones. The same is with a typical, you know, homicide rate that you mentioned. It's one of the highest in the world.
So, George Ciccarello, Mar, let me go back to you on this, because if all of this violence is to overturn the Maduro government or delegitimize it or express frustration and anger, the Maduro government has come back and said these are a lot of anarchists and fascists and terrorists and so forth, and the United States is... has his hand in a very strong and dramatic way. And your take on all of that would be what?
Well, I mean, as other people have agreed, you know, of course the U.S. is paying attention to this. We should bear in mind that this is not, it's not a secret that the United States government continues to fund the Venezuelan opposition through, you know, through fronts like the National Endowment for Democracy and USAID, and that this is funding that continues to go to these groups despite the fact that some of these groups have been involved in things like the coup in 2002, directly undemocratic attempts to change the constitutional order in Venezuela. And the reality is that this is not playing particularly well for the Venezuelan opposition. And for this movement, we really hit a turning point a couple of weeks back when it became clear that against the claims and the self-description of a lot of these protesters, that many of these protests were actually very violent, especially if we're talking about a place like Táchira, where people are sort of assaulted on a daily basis and even charged tolls to pass the blockades or the guarimbas. So when it became clear that these protests were actually not the sort of peaceful democratic movement in the streets necessarily that they claimed to be, the tide really began to turn. And you had some very sort of, you know, slightly crazy statements by fringe opposition leaders that have really disrupted the ability of the Venezuelan opposition to make it look like this is anything but an attempt to, you know, to unseat an elected leader. And we should bear in mind that the suggestion, as you said earlier, people are not very fond of the idea of removing a democratically elected leader. Well, rightly so, because this is precisely what happened in 2002. And so I think we can be a little, you know, sympathetic with the fact that people maybe don't want to see their even a leader they maybe didn't vote for just simply taken out of office through undemocratic means.
As controversial as Hugo Chavez was, this is a leader that's not nearly as popular, nor as charismatic, nor as much of an iconic folk hero.
That's true on some level. At the same time, Nicolas Maduro has very big shoes to fill, and I think he knows he's not Chavez. The movements know that he's not Chavez, and so they certainly have been struggling with how to move forward in the absence of that powerful figure. But this was never a movement. This is never a political process that was about an individual. It was about hundreds of thousands of people organizing in collectives and communes and self-managed factories in attempts to build something very different from the society that existed before. And Maduro has actually been essentially under attack from day one. You know, the opposition still refuses to elect, I mean, to recognize his election in April, and has been essentially on the offensive because they feel as though this is a moment of weakness. But in the end, they've actually in some ways divided and shot themselves in the foot over the course of these last few weeks.
Well, anti-government protests are escalating in Venezuela, and you may want to add your voice to this conversation. We cordially invite you to do so. Our toll-free number is available now, and you can call us and bring any questions or comments you have to the fore. The toll-free number, 866-733-6786. And again, we welcome your phone calls and involvement in the program, 866-733-6786. You can also email us. Our email address is forum@kqed.org, or post any questions or comments reflecting your concerns and your thoughts about what's going on in Venezuela onto our website, kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment. And you can also tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @KQEDForum. Again, at least 29 people have died in Venezuela in clashes between the government and opposition groups, and violence between police and those protesting high crime, inflation, and shortages of supplies under President Nicolas Maduro have been escalating since last month. We checked in with William Newman of the New York Times, and our guests are George Ciccarello Marr, assistant professor in the Department of History and Politics at Drexel University and author of We Created Chavez, A People's History of the Venezuelan Revolution, and Moises Naim, who is a senior associate in the Carnegie Endowment for International Peace and former editor of the Foreign Policy Journal and the author of The End of Power. Moises Naim, we'll get our callers and our listeners involved in this, but just how much is this crackdown feeding into, well, the violence? We mentioned earlier Leopoldo Lopez, the former mayor who was jailed, and you've got a new jailing, as was pointed out by William Newman, of another mayor of Valencia. Is the government crackdown tough enough that it's just feeding into this opposition?
Yes, and that's absolutely that. And as you know, violence breeds violence. And we have seen, and the government is cracking down in the most undemocratic ways. The government just initiated a procedure to rip from congressional immunity Maria Corina Machado, who is one of the deputies of the opposition that has gotten more votes. They want to strip her from the immunity to jail her. Under accusations of all kinds, they call her an assassin and a terrorist and all that. There is a very strong narrative of distraction here. You know, the story that this is a benevolent, humane socialist movement to try to give the poor the voice that they never had, you know, has to confront the fact that these ideas and this government and this regime has been in power for 15 years. A lot of the students that are in the streets don't know anything but this government, first President Chavez and then now President Maduro. Saying that this was not about a man, but it was about a movement is surely a misstatement of the reality. This was always about Hugo Chavez. If you go to Venezuela, you can see a personality cult that you will typically see in other authoritarian regimes. It bear in mind that this is a government that for 15 years has controlled the main source of revenues of the country, which is the oil industry, but also the Supreme Court, the National Assembly. All the levers of power, really, have been in the hands of one man and in the hands of the executives. So they have had the ability to use a lot of money because they enjoy the windfall in oil prices that have created the biggest revenue for the government in Venezuela's history. But they also had an institutional blank check because they controlled all the institutions and could do whatever they wanted. So the distraction is to start talking about something else, calling students fascists, talking about the United States intervention, talking about all kinds of things, not to talk about performance, a performance that has been 15 years in the making, with all kinds of concentration of economic power, institutional power, political power, and we see the results. This is a country that is quickly going in the way of a failed state.
And I want to mention...
it's very hard to blame others here.
I want to hear what Professor Ciccarelli Morris has to say about that, but oil exports now contribute 95% of Venezuela's revenues. I mean, just to give you an idea of what the economic situation is there, despite all that oil revenue. The opposition, intelligence agents, George Ciccarello Marr, have detained, as we said earlier, Mayor Daniel Ceballos on charges of inciting violence and fostering deadly protests. And a month ago, party leader and mayor Leopoldo Lopez was detained on similar charges. A lot of this begins to sound like a government that is... how do you read it? It sounds very repressive.
Well, I mean, let's be clear. Just to drive home this fact that we're talking about, you know, there's a narrative out there that this is a sort of government engaged in mass human rights abuses against unarmed protesters, when actually the vast majority of the deaths have not been of protesters. A lot of them have been Chavistas who are...
That's not true.
That is true. That is true. People who are attempting to clear the barricades. There was a man killed yesterday trying to clear the barricades. National Guard was shot in the back and killed yesterday.
We know that the violence, the guns,
and so we're talking about the majority of the deaths.
We've got two people talking at the same time. Let's have Professor Chiarello
air with regard to that. And I'm not surprised that, you know, that Moises Naim wants to, you know, claim that there's distraction going on or wants to draw attention to performance. I'm glad to draw attention to performance, and it's particularly the fact that Venezuela has become a much more equal society, the fact that poverty has been dramatically reduced, the fact that people, you know, poor people especially now have access to education and healthcare they didn't have access to before. And we need to be clear about the fact that, you know, I'm not surprised to hear, you know, Moises Naim say something like this. He is someone who was actually directly involved in instituting brutal, repressive economic policies in 1989 that led to riot and that led to mass human rights abuses and massacres in 1989. And you didn't have him, for example, resigning from the government when the government shot hundreds and perhaps even thousands of people to death in the streets, but instead pushing forward these brutal policies. And there's really no indication that the Venezuelan opposition today has alternative policies to return to, you know, the most brutal neoliberalism, which would effectively cast all, you know, all the weight and the suffering of economic reform onto the poorest members of Venezuelan society again.
All right, I want to bring our listeners into this. In fact, we
Don't
have a Venezuelan.
I have to respond to the fact that he has just accused me of being a brutal murderer.
Was that the nature of your accusation specifically, George?
No, I said he was a government minister who instituted policies during a period that led to the murder of protesters in the streets, and furthermore did not denounce the government as a human rights abuser, as he's doing today, and did not resign his post. He stayed there and continued the same economic policies for well over a year.
Can I just...
Yeah, go ahead.
I think I deserve the right to
reply
to that.
Of course. Moises Naim, yeah, go ahead. We've got
First, please note that instead of responding to the concrete facts that I'm giving, he's doing ad hominem accusations. He's shooting the messenger. He's not replying to the factual assertions that I made. Secondly, what he's describing is not true. It's factually not true. It has been demonstrated. There are books about this. His version is a highly ideologized and tendentious version. And his accusations, his ad hominem accusations about me have no foundation. But the point, again, what I want to stress is that note that Professor Chiarello needs to talk about something that happened 20 or more years ago instead of talking about the 15 years in which this government, the government of Hugo Chavez and then his successor, have created the conditions. What we have is a fact. We have a country that is underperforming every other country in the region, despite the fact that is the wealthiest country and has the largest oil reserves in the world. So that is what needs to be discussed. And using, rhetorical tricks and distractions and talking about something else is just an excuse not to talk about the fact that this government that has concentrated power, that has had all the money in the world, to use it in any way it could, is just showing the results.
You were the former Minister of Trade, though. We want to get that on the record here, Moises Naim.
And
I want to get our callers in here. We've got a caller from Florida who is Venezuelan. Candace joining us. Good morning.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I want to address two very important issues. One, the dangers that these students, I mean, they're being arrested and then tortured, because I have friends that their parents are calling me to the States in complete panic. So we do not have someone there verifying and showing this on the news of all these kids that they're being arrested so that they scare the others to stop protesting on the streets. And then the other one is, when I went to parties in Venezuela with the military, they're coming to the States. We need to block these military. They have homes in Orlando. They go to Disney World. So it's a very unfair situation to be staying in the United States doing all of this when all the military that before made very little per month, now they're making thousands of dollars, and they're traveling to the United States enjoying a maximum of luxury. So the military in high positions are not suffering the economic sanctions that all the poor are of standing in line for 3 hours, because they just come to the States and go buy all their stuff. So that is very important. The United States realizes that there are military personnel in Venezuela that have homes in the United States, and they have thousands of dollars in the banks. And unless the United States stands up and says, this is it, I mean, you guys cannot be saying that the United States is guilty of what they're not doing, and then you come to the United States and, you know, and enjoy what the freedoms we have here in the United States. I want to make sure that the United States steps up and does something about it, because it's very frustrating. This military general's wife had a fan because she was hot, and the fan was from Disney World. You know the little water fans that you have?
All right, Candace, let me thank you for the call. I think your sentiments have been pretty clearly expressed, and I want to hear from some other listeners. In fact, here's Sam, who writes on our website, there's a striking double standard in that many protests in Latin America, from Santiago, Chile, to Oaxaca and Atenco, Mexico, where people have been detained, water cannon, tear gassed, arrested under absurd terror charges, killed, and so on. The difference is that they are left-wing protesters, indigenous people, and so on. Yet while Venezuela gets threatened with sanctions for repressing predominantly upper-middle-class and white protesters, Mexican and Chilean leaders are welcomed into the White House. In Venezuela, the protesters have done things like putting wires at neck level to decapitate motorcyclists and have murdered a Chavista from Chile, merely trying to clean up her neighborhood. It's good to be critical of government oppression, but the kind of criticism coming out of the U.S. is ridden with double standards rooted in class and political differences. And let me bring another caller on, and that's you, Mario. Good morning.
Hi. Earlier, Marco, you said that pointed out the poor performance of the economy, and you make it sound like this is all the policy of the government, where I think you have to take into consideration the fact that the neighboring country, Colombia, it has a very porous border. I've crossed that border myself. And all the subsidized products that help the poor people, medicine, food, gasoline, is being siphoned off to the other country. And that's what creates a lot of this shortage, is that it seems like for some reason the government can't manage the economy, whereas they're doing just as good a job as anybody else. But since they subsidize products for the poor, the Colombians who are against this kind of government benefit from the subsidized prices. And I wish there was someone opposite Naeem on TV to give a view every single day. And since he was in the government before, what did he do with all the petrodollars that they had then?
It's interesting that you should mention that question about petrodollars in the economy. I'm looking at an email here from a listener named Debbie. Says, if oil prices were enough to create a more equal, prosperous society, what about Nigeria? Venezuela under Chavez and his party used the price of oil to benefit the people and not the elite. And certainly that seems to be the sentiment among many in the slums and many of the poor in Venezuela. But I'd like to just get, we've got literally seconds left here, from each of our guests, a quick sense of really who's to blame here, largely as far as the government or or just circumstances beyond the control of the government. George Higuerello Mar?
Well, I would say that certainly there are economic problems, but these are systematic problems, and these are systematic problems having to do with the oil economy and the very difficult effort to move away from an oil economy toward one in which Venezuela is able to actually produce, and to do so in a context of increasing equality and participation. This is a very tall task. And so, you know, the goal is for Venezuelans, the ones who are sitting out these middle-class protests, to continue to press forward with building participatory institutions and building a new economy that will truly be able to sustain it.
Let me hear from you on this, Moises Naeem, please.
Yes, what's happening in Venezuela is not about the United States. It's about Venezuela and the Venezuelans that love freedom and that have been mistreated by 15 years of a government that has not done much for the majority of the country, despite all kinds of resources. Yes, poverty has gone down in Venezuela, but it has gone down less than any other countries in the region. Countries without the oil and with a lot of democracy, without the concentration of power, without the abuses of power of the Chavez government, have done much, much better in alleviating social ills than Venezuela.
We will have to leave it there. Thank you, Moises Naeem. Thank you, George Higuerello Mar. And thanks to William Newman, who joined us earlier. And Forum is produced by Judy Campbell and Irene Noguchi. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Engagement producer Amanda Stupai, with online support from David Marks. Senior editor is Dan Zoll, and our interns Jack Detch, Marisa Endicott, Mariam Jamil, Hannah Rose Levy, Audrey Gertz, and Daniel Radin. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.